Star Wars, Dark Force Rising, by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 2, side 1. You're cleared for pad 8. Counselor Organa Solo will meet you. Thanks, Control, Han Solo said, easing the ship down toward the Imperial City, and eyeing with distaste the dark cloud cover that hung over the whole region like some brooding menace. He'd never put much stock in omens, but those clouds sure didn't help his mood any. And speaking of bad moods, reaching over, he tapped the ship's intercom switch. Get ready for landing, he called. We're coming into our approach. Thank you, Captain Solo, C-3PO's stiffly precise voice came back. A little stiffer than usual, actually. The droid must still be nursing a wounded ego, or whatever it was that passed for ego in droids. Han shut off the intercom, lip twisting with some annoyance of his own as he did so. He'd never really liked droids much. He'd used them occasionally, but never more than he'd absolutely had to. 3PO wasn't as bad as some of those he'd known. But then, he'd never spent 6 days alone in hyperspace with any of the others, either. He'd tried. He really had, if for no other reason than that Leia rather liked 3PO and would have wanted them to get along. The first day out from Sleesvan, he'd let 3PO sit up front in the cockpit with him, enduring the droid's prissy voice and trying valiantly to hold something resembling a real conversation with him. The second day, he'd let 3PO do most of the talking, and had spent a lot of his time working in maintenance crawlways where there wasn't room for two. 3PO had accepted the limitation with typical mechanical cheerfulness, and had chattered at him from outside the crawlway access hatches. By the afternoon of the third day, he'd banned the droid from his presence entirely. Leia wouldn't like it when she found out, but she'd have liked it even less if he'd given in to his original temptation and converted the droid into a set of backup alluvial dampers. The Falcon was through the cloud layer now, and in sight of the monstrosity that was the Emperor's old palace. Banking slightly, Han confirmed that Pad 8 was clear and brought them down. Leia must have been waiting just inside the canopy that shrouded the pad's accessway, because she was already beside the ship as Han lowered the Falcon's ramp. Han, she said, her voice laced with tension. Thank the Force you're back. Hi, sweetheart, he said, being careful not to press too hard against the increasingly prominent bulge of her belly as he hugged her. The muscles in her shoulders and back felt tight beneath his arms. I'm glad to see you, too. She clutched him to her for a moment, then gently disengaged. Come on, we've got to go. Chewbacca was waiting for them just inside the accessway, his bowcaster slung over his shoulder in ready position. Hey, Chewie, Han nodded, getting a growled Wookiee greeting in return. Thanks for taking care of Leia. The other rumbled something strangely noncommittal in reply. Han eyed him, decided this wasn't the time to press for details of their stay on Kashyyyk. What have I missed? He asked Leia instead. Not much, she said as she led the way down the ramp corridor and into the palace proper. After that first big flurry of accusations, Phileas apparently decided to cool things down. He's talked the council into letting him take over some of Akbar's internal security duties, but he's been behaving more like a caretaker than a new administrator. He's also hinted broadly that he'd be available to take charge of the Supreme Command, but he hasn't done any real pushing in that direction. Doesn't want anyone to panic, Han suggested. Accusing someone like Akbar of treason is a big enough bite for people to chew on as it is. Anything more and they might start choking on it. That's my feeling, too, Leia agreed. which should give us at least a little breathing space to try and figure out this bank thing. Yeah, what's the lowdown on that anyway? Anne asked. All you told me was that some routine bank check had found a big chunk of money in one of Akbar's accounts. It turns out it wasn't just a routine check, Leia said. There was a sophisticated electronic break-in at the Central Clearing Bank on Coruscant the morning of the Swiss van attack, with several big accounts being hit. The investigators ran a check on all the accounts the bank served and discovered that there'd been a large transfer into Akbar's account that same morning from the central bank on Palanhi. You familiar with Palanhi? Everybody knows Palanhi, Anne said sourly. Little crossroads planet with an overblown idea of their own importance. And the firm belief that if they can stay neutral enough, they can play both sides of the war to their own profit, Leia said. Anyway, the central bank there claims that the money didn't come from Palanhi itself and must have just been transferred through them. So far, our people haven't been able to backtrack it any further. Anne nodded. I'll bet Phalia's got some ideas where it came from. The ideas aren't unique to him, Leia sighed. He was just the first one to voice them, that's all. And to make himself a few points at Akbar's expense, Anne growled. Where have they put Akbar anyway? The old prison section? Leia shook her head. He's under a sort of loose house arrest in his quarters while the investigation is underway. More evidence that Phalia's trying not to ruffle any more feathers than he has to. Or else that he knows full well there isn't enough here to hang a stunted Jawa from, Anne countered. Has he got anything on Akbar besides the bank thing? Leia smiled wanly. Just the near fiasco at Sluis Van, and the fact that it was Akbar who sent all those warships out there in the first place. Point, Anne conceded. Trying to recall the old Rebel Alliance regulations on military prisoners. If he remembered correctly, an officer under house arrest could receive visitors without those visitors first having to go through more than minor amounts of bureaucratic data work. Though he could easily be wrong about that. They'd made him learn all that stuff back when he'd first let them slap an officer's rank on him after the Battle of Yavin. But regulations were never something he'd taken seriously. How much of the council does Phalia have on his side? He asked Leia. If you mean solidly on his side, only a couple, she said. If you mean leaning in his direction, well, you'll be able to judge for yourself in a minute. Anne blinked. Lost in his own mulling of the mess, he hadn't really paid attention to where Leia was taking him. Now, with a start, he suddenly realized they were walking down the grand corridor that linked the council chamber with the much larger assemblage auditorium. Wait a minute, he protested. Now? I'm sorry, Han, she sighed. Mon Mothma insisted. You're the first person back who was actually at the Sluis Van attack, and there are a million questions they want to ask you about it. Han looked around the corridor, at the high, convoluted vaulting of the ceiling, the ornate carvings and cut-glass windows alternating on the walls, the rows of short, greenish-purple saplings lining each side. The Emperor had supposedly designed the grand corridor personally, which probably explained why Han had always disliked the place. I knew I should have sent 3PO out first, he growled. Leia took his arm. Come on, soldier. Take a deep breath and let's get it over with. Chewie, you'd better wait out here. The usual council chamber arrangement was a scaled-up version of the smaller inner council room. An oval table in the center for the councilors themselves, with rows of seats along the walls for their aides and assistants. Today, to Han's surprise, The room had been reconfigured more along the lines of the huge assemblage commons. The seats were in neat, slightly tiered rows, with each counselor surrounded by his or her assistants. In the front of the room, on the lowest level, Mon Mothma sat alone at a simple lectern, looking like a lecturer in a classroom. "Whose idea was this?" Anne murmured, as he and Leia started down the side aisle toward what was obviously a witness chair next to Mon Mothma's desk.
"Mon Mothma set it up," she murmured. "I'd be willing to bet it was Phalia's idea, though."
Anne frowned. He'd have thought that underlining Mon Mothma's preeminent role in the council like this would be the last thing Phalia would want. "I don't get it." She nodded toward the lectern.
"Giving Mon Mothma the whole spotlight helps calm any fears that he plans to make a bid for her position. At the same time, putting the counselors and their aides together in little groups tends to isolate the counselors from each other."
"I get it," Anne nodded back. "Slippery little fuzzball, isn't he?"
"Yes, he is," Leia said. "And he's going to milk this Luis Van thing for all it's worth. Watch yourself."
They reached the front and separated, Leia going to the first row and sitting down next to her aide, Winter, and continuing on to Mon Mothma and the witness chair waiting for him.
"You want me sworn in or anything?" he asked without preamble.
Mon Mothma shook her head.
"That won't be necessary, Captain Solo," she said, her voice formal and a little strained. "Please sit down. There are some questions the Council would like to ask you about the recent events at the Sluis Van shipyards."
Ken took his seat. Phalia and his fellow Bothans, he saw, were in the group of front row seats next to Leia's group. There were no empty seats anywhere that might have signified Admiral Ackbar's absence, at least not in the front where they should have been. The counselors, seated according to rank, had apparently shuffled positions so as to each be closer to the front. Another reason for Phalia to have pushed this configuration, Anne decided. At the usual oval table, Ackbar's seat might have been left vacant.
"First of all, Captain Solo," Mon Mothma began, "we would like you to describe your role in the Sluis Van attack. When you arrived, what happened subsequently, that sort of thing."
"We got there pretty much as the battle was starting," Anne said. "Came in just ahead of the Star Destroyers. We picked up a call from Wedge, that's Wing Commander Wedge Antilles of Rogue Squadron, saying that there were TIE fighters loose in the shipyards."
"Excuse me," Phalia interrupted smoothly. "Just who is the we here?"
Anne focused on the Bothan. On those violet eyes, that soft cream-colored fur, that totally bland expression.
"My crew consisted of Luke Skywalker and Lando Calrissian."
As Phalia no doubt knew perfectly well already, just a cheap trick to throw Han off stride.
"Oh, and two droids. You want their serial numbers?"
A slight rustle of not-quite-humor ran through the room, and Han had the minor satisfaction of seeing that cream-colored fur flatten a little.
"Thank you, no," Phalia said.
Rogue Squadron was engaged with a group of approximately 40 TIE fighters and 50 stolen mole miners that had somehow been smuggled into the shipyards, Anne continued. "We gave them some assistance with the fighters, figured out that the Imperials were using the mole miners to try and steal some of the capital ships that had been pressed into cargo duty, and were able to stop them. That's about it."
"You're too modest, Captain Solo," Phalia spoke up again. "According to the reports we've received here, it was you and Calrissian who managed single-handedly to thwart the Empire's scheme."
Han braced himself. Here it came. He and Lando had stopped the Imperials, all right.
Only they'd had to fry the nerve centers of over 40 capital ships to do it.
"I'm sorry about wrecking the ships," he said, looking Phalia straight in the eye. "Would you rather the Imperials have taken them intact?"
A ripple ran through the Bothan's fur.
"Really, Captain Solo," he said soothingly, "I have no particular quarrel with your method of stopping the Empire's attempt at grand larceny, costly though it might have been. You had only what you could work with. Within your constraints, you and the others succeeded brilliantly."
Han frowned, feeling suddenly a little off balance. He had expected Phalia to try to make him the man under the hammer on this one. For once, the Bothan seemed to have missed a bet.
"Thank you, Counselor," he said, for lack of anything better to say.
"Which is not to say that the Empire's attempt and near victory are not important," Phalia said, his fur rippling the opposite direction this time as he looked around the room.
"On the contrary, at the best, they speak of serious misjudgments on the part of our military commanders. At the worst, they may speak of treason."
Han felt his lip twist. So that was it. Phalia hadn't changed his stripes. He'd simply decided not to waste a golden opportunity like this on a nobody like Han.
"With all due respect, Counselor," he spoke up quickly, "what happened at Sluis Van wasn't Admiral Akbar's fault. The whole operation..."
"Excuse me, Captain Solo," Phalia cut him off. "And with all due respect to you, let me point out that the reason those capital ships were sitting at Sluis Van in the first place, undermanned and vulnerable, was that Admiral Akbar had ordered them there."
"There isn't anything like treason involved," Han insisted doggedly. "We already know that the Empire's got a tap into our communications."
"And who's responsible for such failures of security?" Phalia shot back. "Once again, the blame falls squarely around Admiral Akbar's shoulders."
"Well then, you find the leak," Han snapped.
Peripherally, he could see Leia shaking her head urgently at him. But he was too mad now to care whether he was being properly respectful or not.
"And while you're at it, I'd like to see how well you would do up against an Imperial Grand Admiral."
The low-level buzz of conversation that had begun in the room cut off abruptly.
"What was that last?" Mon Mothma asked.
Silently, Han swore at himself. He hadn't meant to spring this on anyone until he'd had a chance to check it out himself at the palace archives. But it was too late now.
"The Empire is being led by a Grand Admiral," he muttered. "I saw him myself."
The silence hung thick in the air. Mon Mothma recovered first.
"That's impossible," she said, sounding more like she wanted to believe it than that she really did. "We've accounted for all the Grand Admirals."
"I saw him myself," Han repeated.
"Describe him," Phalia said. "What did he look like?"
"He wasn't human," Han said. "At least, not completely. He had a roughly human build, but he had light blue skin, a kind of bluish-black hair, and eyes that glowed red. I don't know what species he was."
"Yet we know that the Emperor didn't like non-humans," Mon Mothma reminded him.
Han looked at Leia. The skin of her face was tight, her eyes staring at and through him with a kind of numb horror. She understood what this meant, all right. "He was wearing a white uniform," he told Mon Mothma. "No other Imperial officers wore anything like that, and the contact I was with specifically called him a Grand Admiral." Obviously, a self-granted promotion, Thalia said briskly. Some regular admiral, or perhaps a leftover moff trying to rally the remains of the Empire around him. Anyway, that's beside the immediate point.
Beside the point? Han demanded.
Look, Counselor, if there's a Grand Admiral running around loose...
If there is, Mon Mothma interrupted firmly, we'll soon know for certain.
Until then, there seems little value in holding a debate in a vacuum. Council research is hereby directed to look into the possibility that a Grand Admiral might still be alive. Until such an investigation has been completed, we will continue with our current inquiry into the circumstances of the Sluice Van attack.
She looked at Han, then turned and nodded at Leia.
Consular Organa Solo, you may begin the questioning.
Admiral Akbar's high-domed, salmon-colored head bent slightly to the side, his huge round eyes swiveling in their sockets in a calamarian gesture Leia couldn't recall ever having seen before. Surprise, or was it perhaps dread?
A Grand Admiral, Akbar said at last, his voice sounding even more gravelly than usual.
An Imperial Grand Admiral. Yes, that would indeed explain a great many things.
We don't actually know that it's a real Grand Admiral yet, Leia cautioned him, throwing a glance at the stony look on her husband's face.
Han clearly had no doubts of his own. Neither did she, for that matter.
Mon Mothma's having research look into it.
They won't find anything, Akbar said, shaking his head.
A more human gesture, that, of the sort he usually tried to use when dealing with humans.
Good. That meant he was getting back on balance. I had a thorough search made of the Imperial records when we first took Coruscant back from the Empire. There is nothing in there but a list of the Grand Admiral's names and a little about their assignments.
Erased before they pulled out, Han growled.
Or perhaps never there to begin with, Leia suggested. Remember that these weren't just the best and brightest military leaders the Emperor could find. They were also part of his plan to bring the Imperial military more personally under his control.
As was the Death Star project itself, Akbar said. I agree, Counselor. Until the Grand Admirals were fully integrated, both militarily and politically, there was no reason to publish details of their identities, and every reason to conceal them.
So, Han said, dead end.
It appears that way, Akbar agreed. Any information we're going to get will have to come from current sources.
Leia looked at Han.
You mentioned you were with a contact when you saw this Grand Admiral, but you didn't give us the contact's name.
That's right, Han nodded. I didn't, and I'm not going to. Not now, anyway.
Leia frowned at that unreadable Sabacc face, stretching out with all her rudimentary Jedi skills to try to sense his purpose and feelings. It didn't get her very far.
If only I had more time to practice, she thought ruefully.
But if the Council had needed all her time before, it was going to need even more than that now.
Mon Mothma's going to want to know eventually, she warned him.
And I'm going to tell her, eventually, he came back. Until then, it's going to be our little secret.
As in leverage?
You never can tell.
A shadow of something crossed Han's face. The name's not going to do the Council any good right now, anyway. The whole group's probably buried themselves away somewhere, if the Empire hasn't caught up with him.
You don't know how to find them? Leia asked.
Han shrugged. There's a ship I promised to get out of impoundment for them. I can try that.
Do what you can, Akbar said. You said Counselor Organa Solo's brother was with you at Sloisvan?
Yes, sir, Anne said. His hyperdrive needed some repairs, but he should have only been a couple of hours behind me.
He looked at Leia.
Oh, and we're going to have to get Lando's ship back to him at Sloisvan.
Akbar made a noise that sounded something like a choked whistle, the Calamarian equivalent of a grunt.
We'll need to hear testimony from both of them, he said, and from Wing Commander Antilles as well. It's vital that we learn how the Empire was able to smuggle such a large force past so many sensors.
Leia threw Han a look.
According to Wedge's preliminary report, they apparently were inside a freighter whose hold registered empty.
Akbar's eyes swiveled in their sockets.
Empty? Not merely unreadable, as if from a sensor misfire or static damping?
Wedge said it was empty, Han told him. He ought to know the difference between that and static damping.
Empty.
Akbar seemed to slump a little in his seat.
Which can only mean the Empire has finally developed a workable cloaking shield.
It's starting to look that way, Leia agreed soberly. I suppose the only good news is that they must still have some bugs left in the system. Otherwise, they could have simply cloaked the whole Sloisvan task force and torn the place to ribbons.
No, Akbar said, shaking his massive head. That's something we won't have to worry about, at least. By its very nature, a cloaking shield would be more danger to the user than it was worth. A cloaked warship's own sensor beams would be as useless as those of its enemies, leaving it to flail about totally blind. Worse, if it were under power, the enemy could locate it by simply tracking its drive emissions.
Ah, Leia said. I hadn't thought of that.
There have been rumors for years that the Emperor was developing a cloaking shield, Akbar said. I've put a good deal of thought into the contingency.
He harumphed. But the weaknesses are of small comfort.
A cloaking shield in the hands of a Grand Admiral would still be a dangerous weapon indeed. He would find ways to use it against us.
He already has, Han muttered.
Apparently so.
Akbar's swiveling eyes locked onto Leia's face.
You must get me cleared of this ridiculous charge, Counselor, as soon as possible. For all his ambition and self-confidence, Counselor Felia hasn't the tactical skills we need against a threat of this magnitude.
We'll get you released, Admiral, Leia promised,
wishing she felt that confident.
We're working on it right now.
There was a diffident knock, and behind Leia the door opened.
Excuse me, the squat G2RD droid said in a mechanically resonant voice. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Leia said, suppressing her frustration as she stood up.
She wanted desperately to have more time with Akbar, to explore with him both this new Imperial threat and also discuss the legal strategies they might use in his defense. But arguing with the droid would gain her nothing and might get her visiting privileges revoked entirely. Guard droids were allowed that kind of discretion, and the 2RD series in particular was reputed to be a touchy lot.
I'll be back soon, Admiral, she told Akbar. Either this afternoon or tomorrow.
Goodbye, Counselor.
There was just a brief hesitation.
And to you, Captain Solo, thank you for coming.
Goodbye, Admiral, Han said.
They stepped from the room and started down the wide corridor, the G2RD taking up position at the door behind them.
That must have hurt, Han commented.
What must have? Leia asked.
Thanking me for coming.
She frowned up at him,
but there was nothing but seriousness in his face. "Oh, come on, Han, just because you resigned your commission." "He considers me one step up from a complete traitor," Han finished for her. An obvious retort about persecution complexes flashed through Leia's mind. "Akbar's never been what you'd call an outgoing person," she said instead. Han shook his head. "I'm not imagining it, Leia. Ask Lando sometime. He gets the same kind of treatment. You leave the military, and you might as well be Tauntaun spit as far as Akbar is concerned." Leia sighed. "You have to understand the Mon Calamari ethos, Han. They were never a warlike species at all, until the Empire started enslaving them and ravaging their world. Those wonderful star cruisers of theirs were originally passenger liners, you know, that we helped them convert into warships. Maybe it's not so much anger at you for quitting as it is some sort of residual guilt at himself and his people for taking up warfare in the first place. Even if they were forced into it?" Leia shrugged uncomfortably. "I don't think anyone ever goes into a war without the nagging feeling that there might have been some other way, even when every other way has already been tried and hasn't worked. I know I felt it when I first joined the rebellion. And believe me, people like Mon Mothma and Bail Organa had tried everything. For an inherently peaceful race like the Mon Calamari, the feeling must be even worse." "Well, maybe," Han conceded grudgingly. "I just wish they'd work it through for themselves and leave the rest of us out of it." "They are," Leia assured him. "We've just got to give them time." He looked down at her. "You haven't told me yet why you and Chewie left Kashyyyk and came back here." Leia squeezed thumb and forefinger together. Eventually, she knew, she would have to tell Han about the deal she'd made with the Nogri commando Kabarak. But walking down a public corridor of the Imperial Palace wasn't the place for that kind of discussion. "There didn't seem any point in staying," she told him. "There was another attack." "There what?" "Relax, we fought it off," she soothed him. "And I've made arrangements that should keep me safe, at least for the next couple of weeks. I'll tell you more about it later, when we're someplace more secure." She could feel his eyes boring into her, could sense the suspicion in his mind that there was something she wasn't telling him. But he recognized as well as she did the danger of speaking secrets out in the open. "All right," he muttered. "I just hope you know what you're doing." Leia shivered, focusing on the sense of the twins she carried within her. So potentially strong in the Force, and yet so utterly helpless. "So do I," she whispered. Chapter 4. Joris Kabaoth, human, born in Rythkas on Bortras, on 4-3-112, pre-Empire date. Luke made a face as he watched the words scroll up the old Senate Library computer screen. What was it about new regimes, he wondered, that one of their first official acts always seemed to be the creation of a new dating system, which they then went and applied to all existing historical records? The Galactic Empire had done that, as had the Old Republic before it. He could only hope that the New Republic wouldn't follow suit. History was hard enough to keep track of as it was. Attended Mirnik University, 6495 to 43290 PE. Attended Jedi Training Center on Kamparas, 21590 to 83388 PE. Private Jedi training begun, 988 PE. Instructor unknown. Granted title of Jedi Knight, 3686 PE. Officially assumed title of Jedi Master, or 374 PE. Summary ends. Further details of schooling and training? No, Luke said, frowning. Cabauth had assumed the title of Jedi Master. He'd always been under the impression that that title, like the rank of Jedi Knight itself, was something that was granted by the rest of the Jedi community, and not simply self-proclaimed. Give me the highlights of his record as a Jedi. Member of Ando Demilitarization Observation Group, 882 to 781 PE. Member of Senate Interspecies Advisory Committee, 981 to 679 PE. Personal Jedi Advisor to Senator Palpatine, 679 to 577. Stop, Luke ordered, a sudden shiver running up his back. Jedi Advisor to Senator Palpatine? Detail Cabauth's service to Senator Palpatine. The computer seemed to consider the request. Unavailable, the answer came at last. Unavailable or just classified, Luke countered. Unavailable, the computer repeated. Luke grimaced, but there was little he could do about it for the moment. Continue. Member of Jedi Force assembled to oppose the Dark Jedi insurrection on Bafesh, 777 to 174 PE. Assisted in resolving Alderaan Ascendancy Contention, 1170 PE. Assisted Jedi Master Tras Minns in mediation of Dwinawagwin-Gotal conflict, 168 to 466 PE. Named Ambassador at Large to Zepich Sector, 82162 PE by Senate. Highly instrumental in convincing Senate to authorize and fund outbound flight project. One of six Jedi Masters attached to Project 7765 PE. No record exists after Project departure from Yaga Minor 4164. Highlights summary ends. Further information? Luke leaned back in his chair, gazing at the display and chewing at the inside of his cheek. So not only had Cabauth once been an advisor to the man who would someday declare himself emperor, but he'd also been part of the attack against those dark Jedi from the Sluice sector that Leia had told him about, one of whom had survived long enough to face Master Yoda on Dagobah. There was a soft footstep behind him. Commander? Hello, Winter, Luke said without turning. Looking for me? Yes, Winter said, coming up to stand beside him. Princess Leia would like to see you whenever you're finished here. She nodded at the display, running a hand through her silky white hair as she did so. More Jedi research? Sort of, Luke told her, sliding a data card into the terminal slot. Computer, copy complete record of Jedi Master Joris Cabauth. Joris Cabauth, Winter repeated thoughtfully. Wasn't he involved in the big ascendancy flap on Alderaan? That's what the record says, Luke nodded. You know anything about that? No more than any other Alderaanian, Winter said. Even with her rigid control, some of the pain leaked through to her voice, and Luke found himself wincing in sympathy with it. For Leia, he knew, the destruction of Alderaan and the loss of her family was a heart-rending but slowly fading ache in the back corners of her mind. For Winter, with her perfect and indelible memory, the pain would probably go on forever. The question was whether the line of ascent to Viceroy should go to Bail Organa's father or one of the other family lines, Winter continued. After the third voting deadlock, they appealed to the Senate to mediate the issue. Cabauth was one of the delegation they sent,
which took less than a month to decide that the Organas had the proper claim.
Did you ever see any pictures of Kabalf? Luke asked.
Winter considered.
There was a group holo in the archives that showed the entire mediation team, she said after a moment. Kabalf was, about average height and build, I suppose. Fairly muscular, too, which I remember thinking seemed rather odd for a Jedi.
She looked at Luke, coloring slightly.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that to sound derogatory.
No problem, Luke assured her. It was a common misconception he'd discovered. With mastery over the Force, people just assumed there was no reason for a Jedi to cultivate physical strength. It had taken Luke himself several years to truly appreciate the subtle ways in which control of the body was linked to control of the mind.
What else? He had graying hair and a short, neatly trimmed beard, Winter said. He was wearing the same brown robe and white undertunic that a lot of Jedi seemed to favor. Other than that, there wasn't anything particularly notable about him.
Luke rubbed his chin. How old did he look?
Oh, I'd say somewhere around 40, Winter said. Plus or minus 5 years, perhaps. Age is always hard to ascertain from a picture.
That would fit with the record here, Luke agreed, retrieving the data card from the slot. But if the record was right...
You said Leia wanted to see me? He asked, standing up.
If it's convenient, Winter nodded. She's in her office.
Okay, let's go.
They left the library and started down the cross corridor linking the research areas with the council and assemblage chambers.
You know anything about the planet Bortras? He asked Winter as they walked.
Specifically, anything about how long its people live?
She thought a moment.
I've never read anything that mentioned it one way or another. Why?
Luke hesitated. But however the Imperials were getting information out of the New Republic's inner sanctum, Winter was certainly far above suspicion. The problem is that if this alleged Jedi out on Jomark really is Joris Gabaoth, he has to be over 100 by now. I know there are some species that live longer than that, but he's supposed to be human.
Winter shrugged.
There are always exceptions to a race's normal lifespan, she pointed out. And a Jedi in particular might have techniques that would help extend that span.
Luke thought about that. It was possible he knew. Yoda had certainly had a long life, a good 900 years. And as a general rule, smaller species usually had shorter lifespans than larger ones. But usually didn't mean always. And after many hours of record searches, Luke still hadn't figured out just what species Yoda had belonged to. Perhaps a better approach might be to try to find out how long the Emperor had lived.
So you think Joris Gabaoth is alive?
Winter asked into his thoughts. Luke glanced around.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.